Welcome to Great I Am Radio, raising the vibration on everyday life matters with heart and soul. Here's your host, Rebecca Johns.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon. Welcome to a Tuesday afternoon episode of Great I Am Radio. It is June 13th, 2023. I pray it is a blessed day wherever you are and whatever you're doing. My name is Rebecca Johns. I'm proud to be your host here on the radio with you each week as we explore a different topic that allows us insight, revelation, growth, that we would have greater understanding of ourselves. When we understand ourselves, we navigate life so much easier. When it's the better version of yourself stepping into situations, then you have the likely possibility of producing possible positive results. Many times we're a mystery to ourselves. Many times we've developed a life and created a life by default. The past experiences dictate how we learn, how we grow, who we trust, how we trust, how we relate to ourselves, therefore others. And that's why, as a certified holistic health practitioner and purpose coach, ordained minister of the gospel, that I believe it's so important for us to delve inward, for us to be able to ask ourselves questions about who we are, how we are, why we are, what and who we are, what formed us. Is that what we really deliberately choose? You know, you may have been through circumstances in the past that sort of set you up to be conditioned to life a certain way. But it doesn't have to stay that way. There are opportunities to grow past what your environment was as a child, the influence of your social circle, even the deepest connections of friends, families, and community. While all of those layers are important, and certainly we can, I'm sure, agree that there is the product in a person of how they're nurtured, there's also simply personal choice. There's also simply the deliberate act of taking time to heal, taking time to reflect. My clients hear this phrase from me regularly. How can we reflect and detect and correct? It takes looking inward. It takes examining oneself to really get to the bottom of issues, whether in your childhood you dealt with abuse and trauma, or possibly dynamics that weren't directly pointed at you, but maybe in your family, in your culture, in your environment that framed how you perceived. It is believed in the psychology realm that, and the personal development, early childhood development realms, that what you experience from 0 to 10 years old is what you identify as home. Whatever that flavor is that you were conditioned to becomes what consciously, subconsciously, we denote as familiar. So it might not be the best for us, right? It might not be what will give us better, but it's what we know. It's what's familiar. It is home. Today we explore a concept is genuinely a term that comes from the wellness realm, the mental wellness, emotional wellness realm. But it's also gotten to be kind of trendy. Now, there can be some danger with trendiness when it comes to taking topics, issues, distinctions that are truly clinical terms and making them casual. We hear a lot today the term gaslighting. Gaslighting. Gaslighting is a type of psychological abuse that a person or group causes to question their own sanity, memories, or perception of reality. It's rumored to have its roots in a time when oil lamps were being used, and the one spouse would believe there to be oil reducing and the other one denying the claim. Have you been in a situation where someone interacted with you in such a way that you felt like you were crazy for believing what you believed, even though you knew it was true? We hear the term love bombing. Love bombing means a pattern of excessive and disproportionate affection and attention that one person gives to another in a relationship, often at the beginning, but can continue forward in the relationship with the goal of manipulation and control. Love bombing can include gifts, compliments, profession, the declaration, professing one's love, constant contact. And even though it looks like or sounds like love in the word must denote something good, love bombing is considered a harmful and abusive tactic that can increase the dependence and vulnerability of the person who receives it. If I genuinely believe you adore me as you pour yourself into me, it is likely that I'm going to give you more of myself. But if that absorption of your love that hooks me into your energy, your power play, really is just there to manipulate, maneuver me, it is not love at all. Oftentimes, we find ourselves in these dynamics because of situations we came out of in the past that we didn't reconcile. When we have gone through abuse of any kind, and abuse is very simply defined as any action that intentionally harms or injures another person. If you're someone who's been purposely harmed in any way by another person, you may have to really take time to get yourself anchored into a healthy place. And that takes reaching out, getting help. It takes being willing to not just look at other people, not just look at the circumstances from which you might have come, but to look very deeply within yourself, to ask yourself, what is really governing you? What's making you tick? What's driving you to behave the way you do in relationships? There's a world out there of buzzwords, but the truth is the dance between what we call the narcissist and the empath are really heads and tails of the same coin. And while I appreciate the harm that someone who identifies as an empath might incur dealing with someone who we can identify as a narcissist, I do not in any way absolve people of their roles in relationships. we co-create our relationships. If I'm in an unhealthy relationship, whether it's due to my partner or due to my own succumbing to that type of partner, I'm responsible for myself. And if I'm in a space that is not right for me, it is my responsibility to get out of it. Now, where can this not be so simple? Specifically between parent and child. And so today, it's my privilege and my pleasure to welcome back to our airwaves author, speaker, social media phenomenon. I think his channels are starting to grab more and more attention all the time because of his candor, his willingness to blow the whistle on himself and tell the truth to people about exactly why they are manifesting the relationships they manifest. He was my guest on Valentine's Day as we discussed narcissism between lovers, but today we're welcoming him back to the show to discuss Confessions of a Narcissist, the Parent, and the Child. Please help me welcome the decorated serviceman, the difference maker, the coach, and an agent of change, Leon Walker Jr. Welcome back to the show, Leon. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you, my girl. What's going on? How you been?
I'm fabulous. I'm excited.
Blowing the whistle
on
myself. I like that. Yeah, it's always good to be on your show. Yeah, I like that. Blowing the whistle on myself.
Yeah.
That's about what it is.
You are. You do. Sometimes I watch you and I just shake my head. I'm like, man, he is just, he tells on himself. He's like, listen, if you're dealing with a Leon.
Right?
I love that. I love that.
I started doing that. I said, it's better to do it that way because I really don't want people to think that I'm telling on anybody but myself. And some people are going to still feel that way, but you can't get around that. When I say, hey, this is what I did, this is why I did what I did, and this is what I would recommend doing when you're dealing with somebody like me, you know? So I try to keep it like that.
So honest, so refreshing. And I know you get a lot of conversations that come at you specifically from women regarding men and their dynamics of how they have fostered relationships with men who might, I'm going to say might, because Lord knows we love to take clinical terms and just make them casual in our current culture.
Yeah.
We just run around diagnosing people. Okay. But some of us are just imbalanced. You know, some of us are just, we've been through stuff. We're not as clear in our mind and in our hearts. What's the difference between someone who's just been through stuff and someone who's diagnosed literally and clinically as a narcissist?
And so that part right there, when you're diagnosed, it hurts to hear it. When they don't just say, hey, you know, you're a narcissist. It's a slow type of gradual type of admittance, you know, or finding, you know, and then because you have to go into therapy, it's called talk therapy. You have to sit there. They don't just volunteer. I never volunteered to go on my own. That wasn't going to happen. There's no, because I didn't think there was anything wrong with me. I thought there was everything wrong with everybody else because I'm like the greatest sailor, the greatest husband, the greatest father. Only thing I was great at was being a sailor. And I was bad at being a sailor, too, because it's like the more you drank, the more popular you were. The more women you had, the more popular you were. The more you fought, the more popular you were. The more you lied and deceived people and joked and talked about people and put people down, the more popular you were. So why would I go and try to have that change? It felt good to me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I wasn't going to just show up to therapy, but the three times I went, I don't even remember the two times I went. I don't even know why I went the first two times. I have no idea. I couldn't even tell you.
Was it on the pressure of someone else, on the instigation of someone else, on the demand of someone else?
Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. One thing that happened in 2004, years after I was diagnosed, in 2004, I went off on two of my sailors, females. I was always going off on females. I had this issue with females. I loved them. I lusted after them. I wanted them. I desired them. But I was always, like, had this urge to hurt women. Not physically hurt them, but mentally and verbally hurt them. And that was just as bad. And so I went off on two of them. It was really bad. Rebecca. It was bad, bad. And so I was put up under investigation as to why I was talking to my sailors like that. And investigation lasted 3 months, and I knew that I was narcissistic then, but they weren't even talking about it back in 04, 05. Not much. Not like it is now. And
not like that.
I was
right.
And so then I was sent to see a psychiatrist, and it's like I blew it off. Like, I'm the number one guy on the ship out of, we had like 1,200 people on the ship. I was the number one guy, and like, I shouldn't be sitting there talking to psychiatrists. I'm sitting here holding people accountable. They should do what they're supposed to, blah, blah, blah. I was finding every reason and excuse in the world to continue to put people down that wasn't working like I thought they should work. But I wasn't leading the way that I should have been leading. I was very verbally abusive, and that's a trait. That's a narcissistic trait that they don't talk about. Well, they talk about it. I do. And so I didn't really, like, feel like I had to go sit down and talk to anybody. They got what they got because they pissed me off. That was my mindset back then.
Well, in psychology, it's definitely defined, I just want to give this to our audience, I know you know, as narcissism is defined as excessive interest in or admiration of oneself and one's physical appearance. But in psychology, it's defined as a selfishness involving a sense of entitlement, a lack of empathy, and a need for admiration as characterizing a personality type. So you just pointed to all
right.
of it. You pointed to the selfishness, the self-entitlement,
oh,
lack
yeah.
of empathy, need for admiration.
Oh, yeah.
But you were successful. A lot of people identify narcissists because I talk to people, right? They're like, well, he's a loser. They're a loser. Whether male or female, they're a loser. Listen, narcissism is not for people who fail. It's not for someone in particular. It can be sitting and resting in anybody. But how did you hide it within your success?
Well, it's easy to do that in the military. You know why? Because the more you are successful, the more you get awarded, promoted, and rewarded, the more people kiss your butt.
Okay, so they don't care how you're getting your results. If you're making magic happen, you're the man.
That's right.
You're going
that's
up
right.
the ranks.
There you go. That's right. All hail the king. You're making things happen. So you have a tendency to be arrogant. You have a tendency to be cocky. You have a tendency to be self-centered and egotistical and conceited. And pretentious. You have a tendency to have all of those traits, Rebecca. And those are narcissistic traits. And so you think I'm really stop being who I'm supposed to be or who I am or who I have grown to be in the military amongst all these grown men, black men, white men, Asian men, Latin men, and I'm very competitive. Narcissistic people, for the most part, are very competitive, right? Highly functioning people. Doctors, lawyers, dentists, presidents, CEOs. So you're going to get some success. And also, Rebecca, you become addicted to that success. How can I not say I'm getting promoted from E8 to E9? I'm going from $90,000 to $120,000 a year. You don't think I'm going to be arrogant? And then when they selected me to make E9, it was only 2 out of 19. You don't think I'm going to be arrogant? And I know the higher I go, the more people are going to kiss my butt. But I wasn't like walking around saying that. You don't, in the military, you don't have to say that. As a professional athlete, you don't have to say that. People are going to do that automatically. There's no excuse to be a narcissist, but when you are one, it's like hard to stop. That's what they say. They'll never change because you're being glorified, Rebecca. You're being put on a pedestal. You're being celebrated. You're being praised all day long. And then you go home and your wife does it or your husband does it or your kids do it, okay? Or you go home and everybody relies on you, which could be tiring and draining, but at the same time, it feels good. Man, everybody relies on me. I was that guy too. So it's almost impossible to give that up. It's almost impossible to change. So you start realizing, wow, I'm hurting people. Now you're doing all these good things, but I did a lot of bad things too. I lied a lot. I cheated a lot. I deceived a lot. I gaslit. I gave women a silent treatment. So just as good as I was being and great as I was being in the military, I was just as bad on the other side, the other end of the spectrum.
In my work with clients, we go through a wheel of life, and I work with clients to have a really well-rounded life.
And oftentimes what I see in my work is people that have a really thick spoke on their wheel of life that's got business success all over it, they tend to have a real thin, wobbly, sometimes missing spoke for family.
Yep.
Did you have that experience, and could you please talk about it from two places? What was the experience of family for you as the head of a family experiencing wild success in the Navy and leading, and where you came home and where that might not have been so great as a father? But where was it also for you as a son in your situation growing up? Can you talk about the narcissist as parent and child?
So I found out years later that my sister seems to think that my mom was a narcissist. My sister is a social worker, qualified through her degree, but she's not a practicing social worker. But through her work, her studies, she had to learn about narcissism. And she pointed out that it was from my mother. And through my reading and understanding and people talking about it, that narcissism starts through the mother. And I'm not putting anybody down, but I put my mother down for many years because I accused her of breaking up our family. I accused her of making my father leave. I accused her of us not having water, light, electricity, a phone. This is back in the 70s when my parents got divorced. So I much rather my father stay home and beat my mom than him leave and we have no food and no water, electricity. That's how I process it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I became my mother in a way, lacked empathy, didn't want to love, pushed people away, avoidance, became very stubborn, self-centered, egotist, all those things. Don't get me wrong, my dad had his ways too. My dad was verbally abusive and my dad was very extreme in his actions. So I got it from both, but most, probably 70 to 80% of my narcissistic traits come from my mother. I didn't find it out until I was 46 and when I started therapy. And then years later, my sister started pointing more things out to me. I'm like, God. So, yeah. And so that caused me to a lot of pain, a lot of agony. It made me okay with being promiscuous and being very sensual and sexual. It made me comfortable with not wanting to be married or be committed. I couldn't commit in any relationship. Back, I was always running. I was always afraid. I didn't have heart to tell people the truth. So the gaslighting, the silent treatment, the ghosting, the discarding, my mom did all of that. And she did it quite well. And then guess what? Little Leon did all of that too. And then what happens? I joined the military and become worse. I become a monster. And then as a parent, I treated my kids like my dad treated me. He was very extreme in his verbal abuse. He was very extreme in his admonishing and making us taking care of business as far as like the discipline. He was overboard with that. I was overboard with that in my children. I wasn't a loving father. I wasn't a loving husband. I wasn't a cuddling, wholesome, caring, loving type of man as a parent. So my wife suffered too. My wife starved from attention and affection from me. So it just kept going on, and I got worse as I got promoted, as I made more money. I got worse, Rebecca. I got worse.
Mm-hmm. I want to highlight a couple of things that you're talking about for our listeners, Leon, and thank you for being so generous as always in what you're willing to share about your own life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my organization is called The Godly Woman, as those of you listening know, and, you know, the Spirit really pressed down on me over the last few years and said to me, go get my daughters, go gather my women, because you've lost your minds. And you have forgotten who you are spiritually, supernaturally, as well as naturally. You've lost your compasses bent. And I brought you into this world for a particular function, and you're doing the polar opposite. And what you're defining in sort of the textbook narcissistic mother, I think is really important for us to pause and give highlight to for our audience. Love from a narcissistic mother is unpredictable.
Very.
And it is punctuated by control and anger.
Yeah.
Narcissistic mothers have little patience or empathy for the needs of their children and can be hypersensitive to their own needs. And
oh yeah, now
so,
that right there, Rebecca, hypersensitive to their own, and that blew me away because my mom was definitely that, and I became that. I also become hypersexual. I'm sorry, I mean to cut you off.
No, please, you're rolling with it. Let's roll.
You know, and so that's what she said, hypersensitive to her own needs, yeah.
And this stops children from being permitted to grow up and be themselves. They end up being a shadow or a fragment of that narcissistic parent because they've had to adhere. Let me ask you this, and in the child role with your mother, did you find that in that role you played the empath? Were you the pleaser and the lover and the trying to do everything you could to appease her? Or did you find yourself even as a young boy kind of getting into the narcissistic traits and pressing back and getting into your own hypersensitivity about your own needs?
So that was twofold. I wanted to take care of my mom. I wanted to help my mom. I wanted my mom's love and affection. But it came at a price or it didn't come. And when it didn't come, I felt like, well, if my mom is going to leave me and hurt me, then any woman would. Mm-hmm. And so feeling that caused me a lot of deep pain, being emotionally scarred, and also avoidance issues, which you learn in therapy that, Leon, Mr. Walker, we have avoidance issues. Prior to therapy, I didn't understand avoidance issues. And when women told me, "Yo, well, you just avoid the truth. You just avoid the communication. You just don't want to talk," I would get highly, highly pissed off and shut down even more. Because telling me that was a reminder of what my mother didn't give me or didn't allow me to have. So I was trying to love my mom, but she would push me away. I was trying to spend time with my mom, but she would push me away. I was trying to show my mom my awards and accolades in the military, but she didn't want to see them. So who else am I going to show that to that's going to make me feel good about it? My father was already deceased, so he didn't see a lot of my awards. So the discard and the rejection came from my mother, which is my emotional growth was stunted because of that. And so do you really think I want to be reminded of that by telling a woman the truth?
Right.
No. So I lied to her to hurt her on purpose, and I lied to her to prevent her from asking me about my emotions ever again.
So listen, y'all, I really want to talk to women for a minute here, moms. This comes from Psychology Today. Validation or the lack thereof is a critical part of parenting, and some mothers fall short. This is a quote by Donald Woods Winnicott that really strikes me as a mother. It says this: the mother gazes at the baby in her arms, and the baby gazes at his mother's face and finds himself therein. Provided that the mother is really looking at the unique, small, helpless being, and not projecting her own expectations, fears, and plans for that child. In that case, the child would not find himself in his mother's face, but rather the mother's own projections, and this child would remain without a mirror, and for the rest of his life would be seeking this mirror in vain. What do you hear when you hear that?
I hear struggle. I hear like that's going to cause a lot of problems later on. You know.
So what's your mirror now, Leon? Where do you? I mean, I hear you. And as a mother, you know, I'm a person. I got my own baggage. Like, it's not easy. It's not easy just being a person. And then a person here to validate, support, and empower little people to become big people that are legit and stable. It's not easy. So you spent a childhood without that validation. Where does then an adult man seek his validation now, but in a way that could be healthy?
Well, let's talk about the unhealthy validation first, which
okay.
is
okay.
comes with from within, the self-centeredness. I did this, I did that, this happened to me, this happened to this is what I did, so why can't you do it? If I could do it, you should be able to do it. So that was that type of mindset that if I did it and I went through this and I was broken and molested and beat down and bullied and forgot about, why are you complaining? You can do it just like I did. So I had that lack of empathy was like, don't come to me with that crap, those whiny stories, because if I did it, you could do it. And I was like that with my kids, too.
Mm-hmm.
But being healthy, from a healthy mindset, a healthy standpoint, understanding that not everybody's going to be as mentally strong as you, Leon. Understanding that you have to give back because you have a gift now. Understanding that you have to be aware, you have clarity, you have awareness. You've gone through therapy, Leon. You've made the changes. So instead of pointing the fingers at other people and holding people accountable, how about you help them to become where you are now? Give back. In essence, I need to give back. And that's my healthy mindset, to always help people, because now I made it to where I am by other people helping me.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk about the empath for a minute?
Sure.
When I first met you a couple years ago, what caught my attention about your content is that it really helped me at that time. I didn't just find you fascinating, and I did find you fascinating and compelling and the way you shared yourself, but you helped me personally process my relationships with men, but also my relationship as the extension of my parents, and realizing that the empath and the narcissist dance is one that I've been in my entire life, and that by the time I was finding your content, I was very well versed in our modern day culture's conversation about the empath and the narcissist. I was very much identifying as the empath, which, by the way, leaves one feeling incredibly noble, falsely noble, I might add. Because while I recognize that the empath can be the player in the dynamic who is being perhaps more patient or expressing loyalty and devotion and stick-to-itiveness and diligence and really wanting to see things turn around, I don't think that person is innocent, if you will, or without responsibility to the dynamic that gets caused between them and their alleged narcissist. I think the empath can kind of fuel that flame. And when I found your content, I found your content like, okay, this dude's pushing my buttons because he's about to make me come through my TikTok screen and handle him because he's representing 98.9% of the men I've been involved with in my lifetime. So I was getting my buttons pushed because I was like, ooh, see, dudes ain't nothing. That was the button you first pushed when I found your content. But I kept watching because you're so raw. And I'm so drawn to people that will tell the truth on themselves. And so I kept watching you. And the next layer that got peeled back was one that really hurt me. And that
was
that the narcissists, quote unquote, because God only knows if these men in my life would have clinically ever been, you know, diagnosed as that. But let's just, for the sake of argument, say these narcissistic men I've been with. I had really seen myself in a noble light in these relationships. I really did. I wasn't blowing smoke. I was like, but I love you. Why can't you just see, you know?
I
thought I was being like, I was like, what's the problem over here? But I'll tell you something. The empath is secretly dealing with something. And I'm out to blow the whistle.
Right. Right.
Empaths are only devoted to you over there because they are dead to how hard-hearted and numb they are over here. They don't even know it. They don't know it,
no.
And they don't know that they don't know it. And
right.
So we are so noble. I love you, and baby, can't we make this work? And why are you cheating on me? And why do you lie to me when I'm only honest with you and I'm only devoted to you? Okay, look, there's no way you're in a relationship with somebody devotedly and honestly while they're playing you like a fiddle and you're just standing in it.
Right.
There's no way. You're deluding yourself. You're telling yourself some BS that makes it palatable to be standing here getting this crap shoveled to you.
Right.
And by virtue of that delusional game, you know, I did a women's retreat just recently where a woman told me that for 22 years, she was in a relationship with a narcissist. And she did, this is a quote, "I did nothing but love him, and he did nothing but manipulate me."
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, ooh, Jesus, if that ain't an empath, quote unquote, underlined, bold, italicized in our modern day flavor, trying to stand for her nobility when really she co-created and perpetuated some BS for 22 years. That's what you're really not saying, is I co-created for 22 years a BS relationship with someone who showed me for 22 years he wasn't going to get help. He really couldn't see me or the kids. He really wasn't going to focus on the bigger picture. He really did carry damage. He really was addicted. He really wasn't going to budge, and I really had to be the one to make a hard choice. No, I won't say that. I won't say all that.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say that. I'll say I loved him for 22 years and he did nothing but manipulate me. So can we talk about that? Can we talk about the toxic empath that's fueling the flame of the narcissist? You wouldn't have an audience to play to if we weren't buying tickets and selling out your house.
Right.
Your show would be over. But I keep
Gone.
Buying tickets and coming to your show.
Right.
Can we talk about that?
Yep. A lot of times, I'm talking slow now because I'm getting feedback. It's like I can hear myself, but it gets feedback. But anyway.
You
so
sound
what
perfect
is,
over here, just so you know. You sound good over here.
That's fine. We'll go with it.
Okay.
What happens is the empaths are groomed as children. And so that's who they become. That's who they feel. That's who they like. That's what they see. That's how they think. And it's going to be hard to remove that from them, if at all, if it ever happens. It's like the narcissist can go to talk therapy and get healing and find clarity and guidance. But how are you going to tell an empath that, you have to stop being nice? Because it's nothing wrong with being nice. It's just that you might be nice to the wrong people for too long. And so they start feeling empty and unappreciated. Empaths are not just good people. They're not just wholesome people. You know what else they are? They're hard workers.
Mm-hmm.
Some people appreciate working hard on a project. Some people appreciate working hard to get an A in class. Some people appreciate working hard to get a 4.0 GPA. And some people appreciate having to work on their husband or their wife. And that's the empath. Everything else besides the children, everything else comes second to the empath when it comes to the narcissist. I've been put first by many women that were empaths for 30-plus years, Rebecca. You really think I'm going to deny
above
them
their
of
children,
their favors and
above
sex?
Their, yep. Above their children, above their own health, above their careers. And why would you say no, Leon? Why would you, especially you in a dysfunction state, right? You got this woman in a dysfunction state. You're in a dysfunction state. Why would you say no to that? That's fire to your flame. fuel to your
That's
flame.
Right.
When I was separated with my husband for 2 years, I remember at one point sending you a message and saying my narcissist is at his home. because in our relationship, I definitely played the empath and he definitely played the narcissist. However, it's not like empaths don't have narcissistic traits also.
Right.
They might
do.
Assume the role. Listen, a catcher can pitch. Just because they get contracted and paid to be a catcher doesn't mean they can't throw a ball. It just means
they
need to squat for nine. Right, exactly. Exactly.
Right.
So, you know, what the spirit really put on me in those 2 years that Brian was gone was that my hard-heartedness was did equal damage in our relationship to his infidelity. And that was hard for me to sit with because I'm like, no way you can compare those. No way you can compare those. At least I was loyal. At least I was faithful. At least I was devoted. And as I'm saying this, screaming it to God, I'm realizing how nasty of a spirit I'm hosting. What nasty bitterness is even speaking. And I'm like, ugh. There's nothing noble that's devoted to you for 20 years. I'd go cheat too. I'd go lie too.
Right.
And so we've got this dynamic. So, you know, truly when Brian came back home a couple years ago, it wasn't so much that every issue we had went away. We've been together for over 20 years. It was that the scope, the lens, the viewer through which each of us was looking at ourselves, each other, the marriage, children, the money, the sex, the issues, we looked through a different lens to achieve something differently. Now, in your opinion, and I appreciate that it's an opinion, and y'all out there listening can go to your own psychologist or psychiatrist and talk about your personal situation with them, because I realize this is not ever one size fits all. But in your opinion, what kind of work does a couple need to do if they really are committed to making it work, but they also really have had all this water under the bridge of the dance of the empath and narcissist? Like, now what? Now what? I love you.
Right.
You love me. We're sober-minded enough to look at each other and say, I don't want to lose this. But now what do we do? Because you've been the narcissist and I've been the empath for a couple of decades.
Well, I'll tell you this much, Rebecca. I know for a fact, regardless of what the narcissist is saying, he or she, let's say he, I don't want to ever have to visualize or think about another man in bed with my wife or soon-to-be ex-wife.
Right.
Ever. We don't think about that. Because it's scary, because that's the end all. That's the end of the road that a woman that I've spent 5, 10, 15 years with is about to be with another man, and I don't want that. I can be with another lady, but I don't want to see her with another man that's going to make her look better, and it's ultimately going to take her away from me. Although I'm saying I want a divorce, I really don't want a divorce. I just want to take a break. Women are more mature and still ready to grow. Women will grow forever. Men, we have an end point in mind. And then we take a break, and then that's why we want to take a break. We want a divorce. We want to get separate, all this bull crap. And then when we come back, she's like, oh, no, Leon, this is what you wanted, right? Well, I'm sorry. And now I got to come back crawling with my sob story. You'll be there, but you won't be the same ever again. Because I broke our vows. You know? So that right there, that discussion about, well, Leon, do you, well, one of my exes asked me, said, Leon, do you realize that when we break up, I'm going to be with somebody else? And she hit me. It was like a punch in the stomach. You know, I didn't like that. Because women, when you all mourn, then you leave. If you are pushed away. Men, we leave and then we mourn once we leave. We don't get pushed away for the most part.
Yes.
And now we're on the outside looking in like, baby, please hit me back. I'm sorry. And you're like, well, Leon, it's disrespectful. You haven't been coming home. You've been gone for weeks. You come home smelling like perfume, and I find a woman's hair on your clothes. You know, she contacted me, but we're still here. Your family's still here. We love you. We miss you, but you're gone. But if the woman was to do that to me, I would have a fit. I would break down. So at that point, it's time to sit down and say, hey, listen, Leon, what are we really doing here? I'm going to move on, and I'm going to start dating. Most men don't want to hear that. Do you want to hear that another man's going to be kissing on me, Leon? Another man's going to be holding my hand? Another man's going to be in the house with me and your children? Do you really want to hear that? No, I don't. I don't. You're sorry. I'm sorry. You're right. So you got to talk about those, the elephant in the room. It's right there in front of us, but we avoid it. I did.
And I'm going to just say, as the person who played the empath side, I did. Because, listen, you don't go through year after year and year after year and year after year. Years, ladies. Years, gentlemen. Years. You know what you're doing after years. You're just unwilling to address it. You're avoiding
right.
it. You're running away from it. You're calling it something else.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk here in our last little bit about, you know, I've gotten a sense of your speaking that your mother has passed, I imagine, and your dad has passed. My parents have both passed. But some adult children are out there without parents who've passed. They're alive and kicking. And they're as narcissistic as ever.
Right.
By the way, I'm guessing you fall into the Gen X category as well as your age group, I'm assuming.
Right.
Y'all, I think there was a real narcissistic flavor of our generation of how we got parented. Because were parented by. They were parented by a depression people, the silent generation. They were parented by an even more shut down group of people. So what we got in our generation, our era, the 60s, 70s, 80s flavor of parenting, there was a lot of, you know, and we make jokes about it, right? Rinse it off, walk it off, push it off. You weren't allowed to let stuff phase you. You cry, I'll give you something to cry about. So I just, you know, in the era of today's parenting, parents are really being required to step up their game and change and evolve. We're not allowed to just spit on it and walk away and walk it off. And we're not allowed to do that anymore. Little Johnny wants his feelings heard. Little Sally will talk back. She'll go to the counselor at school and get help. They'll call you in about what kind of parenting you're not providing.
Oh, yeah.
This is a whole different era right now. But for those of us who survived that generation of parenting, and we're here to talk about it, and we still have adult parents and we're adult children, how do you advise people when you're working with people? Do you work with people that are dealing with that adult child two parent perspective, and how to navigate those waters now to somehow honor your parent but also not be trapped in the old dynamic?
Right. Well, the old dynamic, the old school way of raising kids doesn't work, because very few of them have an old soul. The ones that have an old soul understand the old school way of being raised. Yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, I'm sorry. Chores, saving money, going to school every day, not dropping out, not smoking weed, don't have sex yet. That, the basics that we learn, the old school way. So you have to be very selective in who you treat and how you treat them with the old school way of raising kids. Some of them can handle it and some don't. The ones that don't can't, they're curled up in the ball. And those are the ones that will go to the counselor and go to the principal and call the police on you. But at the same time, as long as you don't hit them and call them out of their name and be demeaning and belittle them, you're fine. Because we can get in trouble out here with these kids. But you have to hold them accountable and take from them the things that they really like the most. Make them earn what they get. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's old school. But if they don't have an old soul, you can still teach them how to be raised the old school way. Chores, holding them accountable. You know, we don't raise our voice anymore. We don't have to. We don't have to curse. But don't let them think that they can act like their neighbors that are just talking back to their parents And you don't accept mm-hmm. that at all. I tell my kids, mm-hmm. I don't care what your friend's doing, you're not going to bring that crap in my house. You're not going to talk to your mother mm-hmm. like that. Now I'm divorced, so I still check my sons when they try to talk to their mom like that. I don't play that. I don't mind being a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
You'll need me as a kid. You'll need me way before I need you. Trust me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had to show them that. And if I got to show you after I told you, and I got to prove it to you, then it's going to be even more punishment until you get it right, until it becomes part of your nature. And once you leave this house, you do the heck you want to do and act the way how you want to act. But still, you'll be coming back to me because you're going to break some rules and you're going to meet somebody out there that's just like me that you need, a counselor, a principal, a CEO. You're going to need that person. So you either get it right now or you get it right later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a big shift for me to go from the parenting that I knew to the parenting
mm-hmm.
that my children required.
Right.
Because I was ruled with an iron fist. You know, I'm a
mm-hmm.
73 baby and raised by immigrants from Iraq. You don't play. You know, they say something,
right.
you say,
period.
How high, right? That's it, period.
Mm-hmm.
It's a non-negotiable.
Right. Yes.
I mean, unless you're trying to roll the dice and risk it and, you know, maybe lose a tooth or something, like you'll get paid, you'll pay to play. And I paid to play. I pushed back. I was someone who, real young, pushed back at 5 years old, was standing between my mother and father saying, don't talk to him like that. Don't hit my mom. 5 years old.
Right.
I remember it started. And so you're right about the empath child. And all the empaths said amen, because we're raised from very young making other people's issues and business a greater priority than our own.
Mm-hmm.
Why was it easy for me to be an empath versus the narcissist wife and husband combo? Because I'd spent my whole life making how somebody else felt and what somebody else wanted a greater priority than my own.
Mm-hmm.
And
as
an adult child who hospiced my parents, I had to be really delicate in that dance, because as an adult child, I still wanted to love and honor my parents. I never stopped wanting their love and approval. That didn't ever go away. But I had to manage myself differently so that the dynamic could be healthier, which was not easy, by the way. My 70-something-year-old father from the Middle East, when I said, we're not doing that. God bless my father. God bless him. I would never mean to tarnish his name, ever. He was an amazing soul, and I owe him a lot, if not everything.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a temper,
right.
and he was not afraid of becoming volatile. And yet in his older years, not because of dementia, but because of just straight-up good old-fashioned narcissistic denial, he would say that he'd never hit my mother in their younger years. I stood there during some good old-ass beating, so I know that wasn't true.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he would do that, as his caregiver, I wasn't going to argue with him, but I would look at him and say, we're not doing that today. And then I would look away. We're not doing that today means we're not doing that today. And, you know, Leon, he would just let me have it. He wouldn't even argue.
Mm-hmm.
He would be, he'd be like, well, what are you making for lunch? You know, because I was not going to feed the flame. And I had learned
that, you
know, I don't want to say too late, but I learned it when I learned it. But I learned it at a time that I really do wish I would have learned it earlier. And it's something that I want to leave with our audience today, that you, I want to say preach, because you really do hold some church on your content. One of the messages that you send out is stop feeding the narcissist. You don't want the stray cat at your door. Stop leaving the bowl of vittles out. Can you give us just a couple of tips as we close on some key ways for people to manage their relationships healthier? Let's not even say empath and narcissist right now. Just what are two or three tips that you could leave with our audience to help people have healthier relationships between parents and children, romantic partners, employee employers?
I'll put it all together with overall be approachable. Listen carefully. Be considerate. All the things that are opposite of narcissism, and we're not going to go back to that because we're talking about managing a relationship. But be considerate. Be understanding. Stop being selfish. Put your coworkers and your family, your kids, and your husband, and wife first. I learned one thing about, I was in the Navy, but I went to the Air Force Leadership School, and it's called one thing, one of their core values is called service before self.
Mm.
Service before self. And also be a servant leader. And being a servant leader, you have to be a listener, you have to be approachable, you have to understand people's personalities. I learned how to understand people's personalities from my mother being able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to understand that person's life as a leader. As a leader, as a mother leader or father leader in a relationship with your children in corporate America, you have to understand your people's wants, desires, and needs. When you come to work, you work for them. They don't work for you. That's mm-hmm. the making and the mark of a great leader, a people person. As hard as it was for me to do certain things with people, for people, I did it, but I was in the military, so I was like a catch-22. Either you do well with people mm-hmm. or you fail and you don't get promoted. So understanding your children, your coworkers, and your companion, your husband and wife, it's a leadership role, period.
Yes. I love the irony of your story, Leon. You really have spent so much of your life being of service.
Mm-hmm.
And truly taking care of people and even our country. And I remember in our last, I remember in our last interview, you said something that I want to leave us with again today. And that is that we're so often busy looking for red flags. Grant someone some compassion and start looking for their white flags.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Because whether it's the Leons or the Rebeccas or whatever your name is over there listening, you come with stuff. And so these mm-hmm. tips of being approachable and honest, considerate, listening, and putting others first, that's the recipe to save any relationship and make any dynamic better. So thank you, Leon, for taking lemons and turning them into lemonade in this lifetime and helping others by doing the same. I really do appreciate you.
Thank you, Rebecca, for always having me. I enjoy talking to you. You create great dialogue, and, you keep it going. So very professional. You have a calming, soothing voice like my therapist, just so you know. So,
Right on.
It's easy to open up, talk to you.
God bless you, honey. God bless you. I appreciate you so much. Listen, you know I'll be knocking on your door next quarter. I'll find some reason for us to get on the back on the air and talk.
I got you. You know how we do. Let me know.
Right.
I'm here for you.
All right. Sounds good. God bless you.
Have
Take
a good
care.
Day. God bless you,
you too, honey.
Maggie,
bye-bye.
Thank you.
Happy Father's Day.
Bye-bye.
Yes, I will
Happy,
give Maggie
you.
Your love.
Thank you.
thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Oh, man, Leon Walker Jr. Listen, y'all go visit his page. You will see his books. You will see the ways that he can support you. It's Leon Robert Walker Jr., JR.com. He's a motivational life coach. And, you know, obviously you're listening to the guy talk. Whatever baggage he acquired in life, he's been responsible for unpacking. And I think we can all learn from that. I look forward to seeing you next time here on Great I Am Radio. It's another great guest to help you live your Great I Am life. Peace.